That was Aretha Franklin. A Change Is Gonna Come from her album I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You, that came out that was the Atlantic album. Yeah, I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You, that came out in 1967. And yeah, it's just a little bit afternoon. It's September 1st here, and Saturday here on this is WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. And of course, you can stream us online at weft.org. My name is Ben Theobald. This is the public affairs show. Sorry, my mic is a little bit high. This is the world we live in. My kind of public affairs, usually discuss public affairs, political or politics or stuff that has to do with politics. Today is the memorial service for former Senator John McCain, who passed away last week at the age of, I believe he was 81 or 80. I wanted to play his concession speech. It was that he gave when he lost his election against Senator Barack Obama. And this is would like to thank C-SPAN's YouTube or C-SPAN for having this video available. And yes, this is Senator John McCain's concession speech that he gave in 2008.
For coming here on this beautiful Arizona evening. My friends, we have come to the end of a long journey. The American people have spoken, and they have spoken clearly. A little while ago, I had the honor of calling Senator Barack Obama to congratulate him. Please. To congratulate him on being elected the next president of the country that we both love. In a contest as long and difficult as this campaign has been, his success alone commands my respect for his ability and perseverance. But that he managed to do so by inspiring the hopes of so many millions of Americans who had once wrongly believed that they had little at stake or little influence in the election of an American president is something I deeply admire and commend him for achieving. This is an historic election, and I recognize the special significance it has for African Americans and for the special pride that must be theirs tonight. I've always believed that America offers opportunities to all who have the industry and will to seize it. Senator Obama believes that too. But we both recognize that though we have come a long way from the old injustices that once stained our nation's reputation and denied some Americans the full blessings of American citizenship, the memory of them still had the power to wound. A century ago, President Theodore Roosevelt's invitation of Booker T. Washington to dine at the White House was taken as an outrage in many quarters. America today is a world away from the cruel and prideful bigotry of that time. There is no better evidence of this than the election of an African American to the presidency of the United States. Let there be no reason now. Let there be no reason now for any American to fail to cherish their citizenship in this, the greatest nation on earth. Senator Obama has achieved a great thing for himself and for his country. I applaud him for it and offer him my sincere sympathy that his beloved grandmother did not live to see this day. Though our faith assures us she is at rest in the presence of her Creator, and so very proud of the good man she helped raise. Senator Obama and I have had and argued our differences, and he has prevailed. No doubt many of those differences remain. These are difficult times for our country, and I pledge to him tonight to do all in my power to help him lead us through the many challenges we face. I urge all Americans. I urge all Americans who supported me to join me in not just congratulating him, but offering our next president our goodwill and earnest effort to find ways to come together, to find the necessary compromises to bridge our differences and help restore our prosperity, defend our security in a dangerous world, and leave our children and grandchildren a stronger, better country than we inherited. Whatever our differences, we are fellow Americans, and please believe me when I say, no association has ever meant more to me than that. It is natural. It's natural tonight to feel some disappointment, but tomorrow we must move beyond it and work together to get our country moving again. We fought as hard as we could. And though we fell short, the failure is mine, not yours. I am so deeply grateful to all of you for the great honor of your support and for all you have done for me. I wish the outcome had been different, my friends. The road was a difficult one from the outset, but your support and friendship never wavered. I cannot adequately express how deeply indebted I am to you. I am especially grateful to my wife, Cindy, my children, my dear mother, my dear mother and all my family, and to the many old and dear friends who have stood by my side through the many ups and downs of this long campaign. I have always been a fortunate man, and never more so for the love and encouragement you have given me. You know, campaigns are often harder on a candidate's family than on the candidate, and that's been true in this campaign. All I can offer in compensation is my love and gratitude and the promise of more peaceful years ahead. I am also, of course, very thankful to Governor Sarah Palin, one of the best campaigners I've ever seen. One of the best campaigners I have ever seen, and an impressive new voice in our party for reform and the principles that have always been our greatest strength. Her husband Todd and their five beautiful children for their tireless dedication to our cause and the courage and grace they showed in the rough and tumble of a presidential campaign. We can all look forward with great interest to her future service to Alaska, the Republican Party, and our country. To all my campaign comrades, from Rick Davis and Steve Schmidt and Mark Salter, to every last volunteer who fought so hard and valiantly, month after month, in what at times seemed to be the most challenged campaign in modern times. Thank you so much. A lost election will never mean more to me than the privilege of your faith and friendship. I don't know what more we could have done to try to win this election. I'll leave that to others to determine. Every candidate makes mistakes, and I'm sure I made my share of them. But I won't spend a moment of the future regretting what might have been. This campaign was and will remain the great honor of my life. And my heart is filled with nothing but gratitude for the experience and to the American people for giving me a fair hearing before deciding that Senator Obama and my old friend, Senator Joe Biden, should have the honor of leading us for the next 4 years. Please, please. I would not be an American worthy of the name should I regret a fate that has allowed me the extraordinary privilege of serving this country for a half a century. Today, I was a candidate for the highest office in the country I love so much. And tonight, I remain her servant. That is blessing enough for anyone, and I thank the people of Arizona for it. Tonight, more than any night, I hold in my heart nothing but love for this country and for all its citizens. Whether they supported me or Senator Obama, I wish Godspeed to the man who was my former opponent and will be my president. And I call on all Americans, as I have often in this campaign, to not despair of our present difficulties, but to believe always in the promise and greatness of America.
To identify election interference, our security team is working with independent researchers around the world.
We never surrender.
What's more, in recent elections in Mexico, Italy, and the U.S.,
I apologize, I'm having some unfortunate technical difficulties, but yes, that was John McCain in his concession speech that he gave, and thanks again to C-SPAN for YouTube for having that available, and just some kind of news that's been happening this past week. The University of Illinois announced that they will on Monday. This was early this week. The University of Illinois announced that they will be a free tuition and fees program for admitted Illinoisans, so students that are from the state of Illinois, whose family income meets or falls below the state median, which I believe was $60,000 or around that area. And this is an article I'm reading an article from the State Journal Register. This followed several bills signed recently by Governor Bruce Rauner aimed at persuading local students to choose Illinois colleges, so making Illinois students from Illinois to stay in the state of Illinois. This was a quote from the president of the University of Illinois. We quote Tim Killeen. We've been making this case as strongly as we could for quite a while, and we're very happy to see the state legislators and the governor and the higher education working group start to focus on this issue. It's not just for U of I, but for the whole state. And this was, I believe, State Senator Pat McGuire, who was among the legislators who formed the. He said that that this was a sense for a common purpose, and he hopes that this will help students and families gain a sense of confidence about Illinois higher education. Yeah, this is, I believe, part of U of I's new program called Illinois Commitment, which will launch, this will be in the fall of 2019 for freshmen and new transfer students under 24 years old at the Urbana-Champaign campus. The deal does not apply to the Springfield and Chicago campuses, so this is only for the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, not the ones in Springfield or Chicago, only the Urbana-Champaign campus. And to talk a little bit, just to go a little bit more detail about this program or this new, the program, and again, I'm reading from the State Journal Register, and this is from the reporter Don Rhodes. The program pledges to pay tuition and basic fees for in-state residents accepted to U of I and whose family income is $61,000 or less. The family must also have less than $50,000 in assets to be eligible. So I suppose that means, you know, in terms of property or... I believe that's what that means. The posted tuition and fees for in-state students this year are between $60,000 and $21,000, according to U of I's website. Illinois Truth in Tuition Law requires tuition to remain the same for students for 4 years. And the funding is good for up to 4 years of uninterrupted enrollment for new students and 3 years for transfer students, provided they make satisfactory progress towards a degree. And Illinois Commitment covers tuition for any program. Areas like engineering typically charge more, but not room and board, books, course, or laboratory fees, all elements that comprise a sizable chunk of the cost to attend college. And U of I is spending $4 million each of the next 4 years to support the initiative. And yeah, there's more to it if you want to read. I'm reading an article by Don Rhodes on the State Journal Register's website. So this was pretty big news in the local area. And speaking of more news, and I played Aretha Franklin's "A Change Is Gonna Come." That was from the YouTuber's channel, Jackamlin062. I had to kind of hurry up and get something to play to start the show. So, thank you to him for having that song available. It's an incredible song, of course. Speaking in more university news, former President Barack Obama, who I believe was speaking today at the late Senator John McCain's memorial, will be speaking at the University of Illinois on September 7th. He will be receiving the University of Illinois Systems Douglas Award for Ethics in Government, and he will be giving a speech, as I said, September 7th at the school. Not exactly sure exactly where, but so this will be Friday. He will be, I believe, tickets are currently only available to students. But the speech is, he is expected to offer his thoughts on what's going on, of course, with politics today. What's required from the American people, according to Obama Communications Director Katie Hill. He will expand upon several of the themes from his summer address, including that America is at its best when our democracy is inclusive and our citizens are engaged. The speech will also include a rejection of authoritarian politics, according to a press release. And he's supposed to get a presidential library, I think, that's supposed to open in Chicago. So a lot of reasons for him to be, and I believe tickets are only available for U of I students. So if you're a student at U of I and you're interested, check the U of I website but it will, and the speech will be live streamed by the university. So that's something to maybe keep an eye out, and always fascinating and interesting, you know, kind of a pretty big deal for that to be happening. And I'll just kind of read some public service announcements. We at WEFT were recently informed of an issue with our broadcast tower. To stay on the air, we are making plans to relocate our antenna and transmitter in the next few months. This will cost approximately $50,000, an unanticipated expense that approaches our annual budget. If you are interested in helping to keep this community treasure operational, you can do so in one of several different ways. First, you can join WEFT as an individual member at our website, weft.org. If you have a business, you can become an underwriter of WEFT programming or WEFT programming. If you know of possible grants or other types of funding, you can share that information with us or even partner with WEFT on your next fundraiser. WEFT can provide people power for free promotion. For more information, you can send an email to station manager, that's one word, stationmanager, at weft.org. And as always, and also, speaking of becoming a volunteer at WEFT, or you could become a trained air shifter at WEFT coming up September 9th. Applications will be accepted for the next classroom training session. Yeah, on September 9th on Sunday at 3 p.m. Applications are available on the WEFT website or at the station. We're located at 113 North Market Street in Champaign. You can also submit your application by email at airshiftertraining, all one word, at weft.org. It's AIRSHIFTERTRAINING, in case you need help with the spelling. Of course, no experience is required, but trainees must be current members of WEFT. And of course, for more info, email that email address I just gave you, airshiftertraining@weft.org. Or you can call Vicky at 217-778-1664. And one more announcement. You can bring your friends and family to our annual street party, WEFT Fest, or WEFT Fest, on Sunday. So that's going to be a couple of weeks. This is going to be a couple of weeks from now. Sunday, September 16th. And that'll be from 2 to 6 p.m. As usual, it'll be in the Seven Saints Beer Garden on North Market Street, right next to WEFT. You will hear some great local music and have some free birthday cake, too. Seven Saints will set additional food and drinks, CDs, vinyl, and WEFT shirts. WEFT t-shirts. See, because it's WEFT and then the t-shirt. You get it. Will be available for purchase. Performers include Paul, and I apologize if I'm getting your name, if I pronounce these wrong. Paul Kothheimer, Gloria Rubal, Guaranteed Fresh, and Aquila. I apologize if I'm pronouncing those wrong. Times will be posted at weft.org when finalized. Great raffle prizes include a guitar from the Upper Bout, gift cards and baskets from lots of local businesses, and that will be September 16th, right here on North Market Street from 2 to 6 p.m. Don't miss it. And of course, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. And I'm not sure where I usually do the art theater showings, but I can't seem to find those, so maybe I'll go on the website. But I wanted to show a couple of things. So bear with me as I pull up what I wanted to play. I believe it's September 2nd will mark the confrontation for integration at the, this was in 1906 September, so tomorrow will be the anniversary of the George Wallace's he prevented the integration of Tuskegee High School. He had sent in state troopers to prevent them from coming into Tuskegee High School. And this, Alabama Governor George Wallace. And this is just a little bit of audio from that event. And this is from British Movie Tones YouTube channel.
Will remain closed today as Governor Wallace's integration-inspired order was backed up by a reinforced wall of state troopers and mounted sheriff's deputies, a 240-man force commanded by Highway Patrol Colonel Al Lingo. Though federal attorneys again watched, it was a repeat performance of Monday's story. School buses were waved away, dozens of students and teachers were turned back. Some parents even tried to take their children in, but the troops stood firm. A number of leading Tuskegee citizens declared the large percentage of the white community is angered by the governor's action. Several spoke out in bold language.
George Wallace talks about invasions of the sovereign state of Alabama by the federal troops, but as far as we're concerned, George Wallace has invaded Macon County with state troopers.
The state council and everyone have prepared this to come out well. And as Mr. Sigerson said, we didn't ask for this help, and I think no one that I talked to yesterday said that we could not have handled this. We feel the governor of this state has made a very serious mistake. He's alienated his own supporters. He's brought about a great deal of high feelings in this county, particularly toward him. We've had a elected school board. We're all reputable people. People to enjoy the 100% confidence and support of this community.
In Birmingham, set to integrate tomorrow, there is vocal opposition for Governor Wallace. A group of backers marched on City Hall with petitions today.
I stand 100% with Governor Wallace, and I think Governor Wallace would stand 100% behind this action. Would you accept the use of state troopers?
Sir, I'll accept the use of any troopers to maintain law and order. That's what I'm trying to do here today. Is to do something that'll keep down violence in this city and this county.
Have you got any other plans besides these petitions?
I have more petitions than I have under my arm here, and as soon as I find out what's going on over here in City Hall, I'm going to Montgomery to the governor, and I have his orders to bring them to us.
Neither the school board nor Mayor Bothwell would accept the petitions or see the demonstrators. Though the State Police Army has already moved into Birmingham, Bothwell tonight asked the federal court to delay the school integration order for 1 week. This is Roger Sharp.
And I would like to thank, again, British Movie Tones YouTube channel for having that audio available for me to play. It was a kind of a pivotal moment with what's going on with civil rights. And also kind of so keeping, this past week was the anniversary of Thurgood Marshall, who was, sorry, I'm kind of getting my... he was the first, he was an American lawyer serving as Associate Justice for the Supreme Court. He was its first African American justice. He was confirmed in, I believe, on the Supreme Court from August 30th, so yesterday, I believe, Thursday marked the anniversary of the Thurgood Marshall's being confirmed in the Supreme Court, he was the first African-American justice, and I believe he argued several, before he was on the Supreme Court, he successfully argued several cases before the Supreme Court, before being the justice on, he was the 96th justice and its first African-American justice on the Supreme Court. He was born in Baltimore, Maryland, and he graduated from Howard University School of Law in 1933, and he established a private legal practice in Baltimore before founding the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund, where he served as executive director. And I'm just going to play his... He did an interview with Mike Wallace, and this is from Secret Movies YouTube. So thank you, YouTube channel. So thank you for having this audio available.
But the South considers a lawsuit as being violent. Well, if that's violent, yes, I'm for it. But I'm not for not protecting myself. I am for protecting myself at all costs. If somebody to throw dynamite at it, I'm going to sit there and let them throw it if I can.
As well as in speech, as well as in trying to create a restrained but favorable national attitude.
Well, I do not think that President Eisenhower has done anywhere near what he could have done. I wonder whether it's too late. I don't think it's too late. But I think it's the president should have shortly after the decisions, or at least by now, have gotten on a television network or radio and spoken as the chief executive of this government to the good people of the South, urging them to support the decision of the Supreme Court as the law of the land, whether they believed in it or not. And to use the full influence of his position as president to bring about peaceful solution of this problem. I think he was obliged to do that, and I think that his failure to do so does not help us at all, especially when we realize that as a result of the failure of the good forces to take over, we have allowed these other forces like the White Citizens' Councils and the Klan to threaten and intimidate good people. Moral leadership should come from the top executive of the government. It's his responsibility, and he can't duck it.
How, at the time that he took his stand, and how now do you regard Adam Powell's stand in favor of President Eisenhower in the last election?
Well, I do not have a category for that at all. I think that, after all, Adam Powell is a politician, and why he decided, I don't know. But
were you sympathetic with him? Did you vote for Eisenhower?
Did I vote for Eisenhower? Fortunately, I don't have to answer that. And I'm one of those old school people that believe the secret ballot is secret.
Well, I agree with you, and I'm not. what I'm after is this.
Frankly, that's the only reason. I do say that...
Were you sympathetic with Powell?
Not with Powell as such. I was anti the Democratic Party. I was anti everything that the Democratic Party stood for, as exemplified by Senator Eastland, Senator Talmadge, etc.
Were you pro-Eisenhower?
No, I was anti-Southern Democrat. I know that that sounds, but I think it's very important to keep my position clear on that. That when the Democratic Convention failed to do anything about the Southerners, they lost my support.
As far as you're concerned, it's been a plague on both your houses, both your parties, as far as an attitude toward race relations.
I think that in Congress today, the only bipartisan action is against civil rights and Negroes' rights.
Final question, Thurgood Marshall.
And I'm opposed to a third party.
Well, if you can figure your way out of that maze, I'd be interested to know what it is. Final question. Really? Do you feel any sympathy for, any understanding of the Southerner, the white Southerner who was forced suddenly to change not only his attitude but his whole way of life?
I have as much sympathy as I could have for anybody. I recognize it is a tough problem. It's a problem that at times would seem to the average Southern white man as being insoluble. I recognize it, and I, for one, would do everything in my power, and so would the NAACP, to work it out in a way that would be satisfactory to both sides concerned. And I can't be any more forthright than that, because that's the honest to goodness truth.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Thorne.
A friend once called Thurgood Marshall a tea kettle about to explode, but as we have seen tonight, he appears also to have qualities of humor and patience and quiet dispassion.
And this is, I also wanted to play a little of audio from when he was Thurgood Marshall was nominated. He was nominated to the Supreme Court back in 1967, but he didn't get elected to the Supreme Court until August 30th, I believe. Yeah, August 30th, I believe that's, yeah, so this is just, and this is from the UCLA Film TV Archive YouTube channel. Thank you for having this available.
A 58-year-old great-grandson at the White House. In a Rose Garden ceremony, a 58-year-old great-grandson of a slave is nominated by President Johnson to be a Supreme Court Justice. He is Solicitor General Thurgood Marshall, acknowledged the best-known Negro lawyer of the century. The President also calls his nominee best qualified.
I have just talked to the Chief Justice and informed him that I shall send to the Senate this afternoon the nomination of Mr. Thurgood Marshall, Solicitor General, to the position of Associate Justice Supreme Court, made vacant by the resignation of Justice Tom C. Clark of Texas.
Thus, the highest court in the land, with the vacancy owing to the stepping down of Justice Clark, has named to its august body Thurgood Marshall, the first of his race so honored.
And I also, I don't have a sheet in front of me like I usually do, but I brought up playing today at 2, just as some art for the art theater, is the documentary on Three Identical Strangers. I'm just going to read the titles. I don't have any kind of description, so if you want to know more about these movies, you can go to the Art Theater's website, which is www.theartheater.org. So, playing, I believe, today and tomorrow, and I think on Wednesdays is the documentary on Ruth Bader Ginsburg called RBG. That's playing, it played today at noon, but it's playing tomorrow, Sunday, at 7 p.m. and it's playing Wednesday, September 5th at 4:30 p.m. Also playing is the documentary Three Identical Strangers that's playing tonight at 7 p.m. Also playing will be Won't You Be There, will be, it was brought back, this was brought back for another week at least, will be Won't You Be My, the Fred Rogers documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor, that will be playing today at 4:30 p.m. and Tuesday on September 4th at 4:30 p.m. Also playing is the movie A Quiet Place at, that will be playing tonight at 9:30 p.m. And that will also be playing tomorrow at noon. And for more, if you're interested in for movies and movie show times and descriptions of the movies, you can go to the Art Theater's website at www.theartheater.org. I usually have like a paper with me that kind of goes into more detail about the movie, so I apologize about that. It's kind of a I also wanted to play today's the anniversary, or I think maybe it's actually maybe tomorrow, but September 2nd will mark the surrender of the Japan basically marking the end of World War II. The Japanese surrender to the Allies, and this was radio of what was going on in 1945. I believe it's actual, everything that was going on the radio during the Japanese surrender on the USS Missouri in Tokyo Bay. Give credit to the Fonz YouTube channel. Thank you to that person to having this audio available.
Bound in gray, it's a beige color really, sitting on top of the table down there. The other is bound in black. If the black copy is for the Japanese, it is certainly in effect, because their nation is in mourning today on this tragic day in their history, and they all are looking extremely grim, as if they were attending a funeral. One of the Japanese officers, as he came aboard the ship, was seen to wipe tears away from his eyes. I know him, he's one of the colonels that was sent to Manila for the signing down there. And he is not very happy about the whole thing. Mr. Shigemitsu was watching Japanese General Yoshijiro, you make so fine, and he has a very stern, bearing look on his face. In fact, all the Japs' faces show strong, muscular tenseness around the jaw. This ceremony is not at all pleasing to them, and yet at the same time, I must say that the victors, the allies gathered here, the admirals, the generals, and those men, those correspondents who represent the newspapers and radios of the world, there isn't a man here who has any feeling of exultation. Everyone is glad it's over. General Sullivan is just turning around the document now because General MacArthur is next to sign. Both Japanese delegates have signed or have officially committed themselves, the Emperor, the armed forces, and the people of Japan, to obey all the orders of General MacArthur as Supreme Commander to the Usuzumi office of the Emperor.
The Allied powers will now sign on behalf of all the nations at war with Japan. Will General Wainwright and General Percival step forward and accompany me while I sign?
General MacArthur Vega is just sitting down, and Lieutenant General Jonathan Wainwright, hero commander of Bataan Corregidor, and Lieutenant General Arthur Percival, the British commander at Singapore, have stepped up behind him right at the document table. General Wainwright is assisting General MacArthur to sit down. General MacArthur takes one of the two official pens from the table, and here's his hand, here's his hand. It has started the D. D. O. U. He's writing very deliberately. His hand is shaking. He's bothered by emotion. That is obvious. That is obvious. General MacArthur is bothered by emotion, but he is doing a magnificent job of carrying this thing up. He's writing his name now, though, is his first name. Here comes. He's turned around. He's talking to Wainwright for just a second. He's giving General Wainwright the pen that he has just signed the document with. He has given the first pen to Lieutenant General Jonathan Wainwright, the hero commander of Bataan and Corregidor. Now he is completing his signature on the two documents, and he turns the second pen. He used two pens. He turned the second pen over to Lieutenant General Arthur Percival, the commander of Singapore when the Japanese took that British base. At last, these two commanders who suffered such ignominious defeats out here because their lives were not ready, at last these two commanders see the final, ultimate victory of the powers they represent. General MacArthur is turning over now and signing the yellow copy with another pen. This third pen, as I gather, is just strictly a Navy GI pen on board the ship. The first two were silver-plated pens specially presented for the occasion. General MacArthur is having a little difficulty moving around with this big instrument of surrender document, and he has finally got it squared away, and he's signed. He has signed both. He's checking now on the signatures and plotting. He's got another pen yet. He is signing with yet another pen. This is the fourth pen to be used on the document. Apparently, this pen is for some special purpose, and it wouldn't surprise me in the least if it was sent to the President of the United States. General MacArthur is using a fifth pen. Everyone's going to get a pen out of this surrender document. And here comes one of the big B-29s, which I suppose is the leader of the flight, which was to put on a demonstration of air power here over the bay this morning. The weather is miserable for a demonstration of air power. The cloud ceiling is not more than about 1,500 feet. But everything is going according to plan. General MacArthur has finished signing. Lieutenant General Jonathan Wainwright and General Percival have saluted him. And General MacArthur is back to the microphone.
The representative of the United States of America will now sign.
Coming now
up to the table where these great documents rest, Fleet Admiral Chester Nimitz, signing on behalf of the United States of America. Standing behind him in posts of honor are Admiral William Halsey and with him, Rear Admiral Forrest Sherman of Admiral Nimitz's staff. Admiral Nimitz, his well hair under his tight-fitting neat cap, is leaning across as he signs with great intensity and earnestness this document. This means a great deal to Admiral Nimitz, who's got his fleet across the Pacific, to join forces here with General MacArthur in this momentous occasion.
General MacArthur's looking around for some of the
Republic of the Republic of China will now sign.
A very youngish-looking general, General Hu Young Chang, representing the Chinese Republic, steps up to the table and sits down. General Hu Young Chang is signing Admiral Chester W. Nimitz, who has just signed, flanked as honor men, his own chief of staff and Admiral Bull Halsey. The two naval officers were superb here this morning. They have run off a completely efficient organization for the surrender signing on behalf of the Supreme Commander. The job the Navy is doing here this morning in the Bay of Tokyo is magnificent, and they deserve every praise for the way this thing has been arranged and set up. General MacArthur, I know, is very grateful for the Navy assistance, and he was quite pleased. He was quite pleased the other day when Admiral Nimitz came ashore for a visit with him at Supreme Headquarters. Chinese General Hu Young Chang has now signed for the Chinese Republic, and General MacArthur steps back to the microphone.
The representative of the United Kingdom will now sign.
Admiral Sir Bruce Fraser, representative of the United Kingdom. He's asking for honor men to flank him. Admiral Sir Bruce Fraser, he is dressed in white, wearing the gold braid on his shoulders and on his cap, wearing the gold braid on his shoulders and on his cap, and he sits down now to sign. He has two of his honor men immediately behind him as he signs. He had called their names, but I'm sorry, we're too far removed to pick it up. One of them looks like Vian. One of them looks like Vian, who commands the British Pacific Fleet that has been operating with Bill Halsey. General MacArthur is watching Sir Bruce Fraser. In fact, he's just stepping forward and helping with a pen for a second. There, Sir Bruce Fraser is affixing his signature on behalf of England, Great Britain, the United Kingdom, and the Dominions will follow in order in just a few minutes. The Dominions will sign, will follow in order. And now back to General MacArthur.
The Union of Soviet Socialist Socialist Republics will now sign.
Lieutenant General Kuzma Nikolovich Dorovlanko. Lieutenant General Kuzma Nikolovich Dorovlanko. And he is calling forward two men to flank him as army men. Three men, four men, sorry. No, three men, one Navy, one Russian Air Force, and one Russian Army. And they are all huge men, absolutely stalwart, magnificent specimens. They're both beautiful, dark brown uniform with blue trousers. The blue trousers have red stripes on them. His cap bears the red tabs. The staff officer of the Russian government. He is now signing very rapidly, very efficiently. He's wasting not a second at the papers. He finds himself a little uncomfortable, so he picks up the chair and slides it around while he's sitting in it. He's now signing the other side of the instrument of surrender, which commits all of Japan to the orders of General MacArthur. General Dorovlenko of the Russian, representing the Russian government, representing Marshal Joseph Stalin and the Russian people, is signing now on the surrender document. He has signed the American copy. He's now signing the Japanese copy. He has finished. He rises. Salutes General MacArthur. General MacArthur smiles, nods approval at him, and turns back to the microphone.
The representative of Australia will now sign.
Sir Thomas Blamey, Commander-in-Chief of all the ground forces in the Southwest Pacific area when General MacArthur was Supreme Commander down there, and Commander-in-Chief of all Australian forces, has stepped forward and saluted General MacArthur. He then has called forward for honor guards to flank him, a member of the Australian ground forces, a member of the Australian Navy, a member of the Australian Air Forces, and a member of the Australian Home Defense Command. General Blamey has sat down. He's a large man. His chest is covered with decorations. He again is wearing the red tabs on his cap, which designate a senior staff officer of the British Army. He's wasting no time in signing the documents. He reverses the procedure. He signs this time the Japanese document first and the American document second. Doesn't make much difference. The thing is all getting very formal, and down on paper, this horrible world is about to finally officially come to a close. General Sir Thomas Blamey has finished signing. He again salutes MacArthur, receives a salute in return, and back to General MacArthur.
The representative of Canada will now sign.
Colonel L. Moore Cosgrove. Colonel L. Moore Cosgrove, representing the Dominion of Canada. He is alone. He is alone. He steps up to the table, salutes General MacArthur, wastes not a second, picks up a pen, and affixes his signature. We're still waiting here for the show of air strength, which was scheduled for this morning. It was to be a shared job by Navy carrier planes and General Spots' Strategic Air Forces. However, the weather, as I said, is very bad, and it's particularly bad around the shores of the bay, where there are a number of mountains that disappear at very sudden approaches into the cloud level that is not very high. The ship we're on, the Missouri, is absolutely surrounded by a terrific armada of American and British fighting strength. Just off our port bow are two British battleships, King George V and Howe. Just to the right of us are two American battleships. And back to General MacArthur.
The representative of France will now sign.
General Jacques Leclerc, Hill of the Chad, Hill of France. Is stepping up to the table now to sign, and he calls two of his staff officers up to stand behind him as honor guard. He has saluted General MacArthur. He sits down and picks out his own fountain pen to sign the document. He is wasting not a second in affixing his scent. General Jacques Leclerc, the man who led the handful task force from the Chad all the way up through the desert to Libya to team up with General Montgomery and come on through to Tunisia to join General Eisenhower's forces, then into Italy, then into France, finally into Germany, and here he is saluting MacArthur. He has signed the document.
The representative of Netherlands will now sign.
Admiral Conrad Helfrich. Admiral Conrad Helfrich, representing the Netherlands, the man who commanded the Allied fleet in the Java Sea battle way back in 1942 when the Allies had so little and the enemy had so much. Admiral Helfrich is now fixing his signature. General MacArthur is giving him a hand here. There's a little hitch about the pen, and the general's gone up to lend him a hand, and Admiral Helfrich is now affixing his signature. It was Admiral Helfrich who decided that Allied power that was available in the Pacific, in the Java area, in the Netherlands East Indies area, would fight rather than wait for the Japs to attack. And he sent forth the Allied Naval Task Force to the Battle of the Java Sea, where America lost the Houston, where Britain lost the Exeter, and where Admiral Helfrich lost what was left of the Dutch Navy, with the exception of two light cruisers. However, that battle delayed the Japanese. It enabled us to pull a number of key personnel and a lot of air strength out of Java back to Australia, and every bit in that time, every bit saved in that time, helped save the entire democratic world. Admiral Helfrich shoots MacArthur.
And again, thank you to the Fonz YouTube channel for having that audio available. Couple more PSAs before I end my show. The Urbana Park District offers people age 50 and up the chance to meet for fun and educational programs. The Urbana Park District Cessier Club meets monthly at Phillips Recreation Center. People can eat lunch followed by a program. The Senior Club people can eat lunch followed by a program. The Senior Club takes several trips a year, and there are chances for seniors to drop in for free health checks and participate in different activities. For more information, you can call Urbana Park District at 217-367-1544. And yeah, that'll essentially be it for my show, The World We Live In. I believe coming up next will be Peace Talks Radio, and that will be Denise will be here for that show. And so I will be ending my show with Florence and the Machine from her radio How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful. And so enjoy the rest of your day and stay tuned. You're listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Like the stars chase the sun.